Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/truetransparencypricing. Happy you'll be if the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
We are in Rockville at Champions Run. Doug Matthews is in our studio on Music Circle as we go on the road presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. Doug, good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you very much. Hope you all are.
Very well. So, Doug, last week, when you had the appearance with us, a great Big Orange Sunday also. I listened to Big Orange Sunday, another great edition of the show. After the second loss as opposed to the first loss, help explain what was so different about this game and what you saw from this team.
Well, the difference between the second game and the first game really was night and day, I think, for a lot of different reasons. Let's just talk about from a coaching perspective first. First game, I'm not going to rehash all that, but it was a very poorly planned, called, about any way you look at it, from a coaching perspective. And I truly believe, and as I said at the time, I've unfortunately been in some of those ball games, but that was all on the coaching staff. Didn't have their team ready to play and didn't really coach a game very well. But that was the first game. This last game that we're talking about was completely different. I thought Tennessee played with a lot of enthusiasm, had a lot of excitement, played with a purpose. I thought played aggressive and tough. And again, I'm a former coach, but also a fan watching, I had no complaints in that game. Completely different, a lot of different ways to look at ball games, but that was more of a game against a good football team. Now, BYU's not a great football team, but they're a good football team. They're very physical in both their offense and defensive lines, and I thought Tennessee, for the most part, really played about as well as you could ask an overall team. A couple of positions didn't play very well. And if you don't play very well at the one position in particular, quarterback, then you're going to have a hard time scoring points. And that's what happened to Tennessee. It was unfortunate that the end of the game ended the way it did. Tennessee did about everything right. This coaching staff and players did. They punted the ball deep, no timeouts. I think actually after the penalty when BYU had the ball on their 8-yard line, I think there was less than a minute left. So you would think with less than a minute, with no timeouts, having to go 92 yards with a freshman quarterback that really hadn't done much all day, you would think you'd be in pretty good shape. But BYU made a play. Tennessee was out of position, didn't get a guy on the ground when they should have, and ended up losing in overtime.
Doug, the one common theme, despite the reaction on Big Orange Sunday the last 2 weeks, has been the quarterback play. Jarrett Garantano has been awful, and that's putting it politely. Whenever I've watched him play, he threw a pick against Georgia State that was a clear interception, if not for defensive holding. And this past week, I don't know what he's seen, but he's not seen open receivers because he's throwing it directly to the other team. Tell us what you're seeing when you watch him play right now.
Well, that's what they have to get corrected. I'll point out that I never coached quarterbacks. I coached almost every other position, but I never coached quarterbacks, so I'm not exactly sure. I've been around a lot of really good quarterback coaches and listened to them coaching them, but it's clear that for whatever reason, even a casual fan, as you watch it, you can see that he's late throwing to what appear to be open receivers, on third down and key third downs, he's not getting the ball to a receiver that can pick up a first and 10. That's happened three or four times. Even the first touchdown pass that Juwan Jennings caught, that pass was not going to him, and that could have been intercepted. And then two plays before that, he threw one into the end zone to Wood Anderson, a slant route that should have been intercepted. So for whatever reason, and this is what Coach Winkie and what Coach Chaney needs to get squared away, for whatever reason, he is either not seen or not recognizing or not doing exactly what they want him to do. The problem is that clearly he's the best quarterback. I don't think there's any way that they will bring a freshman in now. And let me tell you why. I watched Nathan Peterman. I was in Gainesville when Nathan Peterson came in and they started him that first ball game. I would not even think about playing a freshman quarterback in Gainesville, Florida, which is next week. Wouldn't even think about doing that because that is, I think, the toughest place for a Tennessee team to play of any venue. Tuscaloosa, Athens, any of them, I think, is Gainesville. And I've seen too many really good quarterbacks, including Peyton Manning, a pretty veteran Peyton Manning, go down there and have tough days. I thought that going back to when Peterman started that ball game, again, I was at the ball game. He was so demoralized after that game that he never came back from it. He ended up transferring and having a pretty good career. So, again, I'm bringing that up because I'm sure that's what's going through Coach Pruitt's mind. They realize that they don't want to go into Gainesville with a freshman quarterback. So, rightly or wrongly, I don't know that Tennessee has any choice right now but to stick with number two.
At what point, clearly he's the best option, he's a veteran option, he's played a lot of football, and he's the best guy in practice. But at what point do you have to just put one of those guys in? Obviously not in Gainesville against Florida, but if they struggle on Saturday, let's say, just to give one of those guys a look, because we heard a lot of this with Josh Dobbs when he was a freshman also. Doesn't understand the offense, isn't coming along as fast as they want. And then they put him in, and he was a gamer. He was making plays with his arm and his feet against Alabama when they put him in the game there. What do you think from a coaching perspective? I know it's difficult when you don't see it in practice, but this idea of some guys just have it in games, and they can turn it on, and they look better when they get out there. And I'm sure, Coach, you've seen guys that are the opposite, that look great in practice, and they freak out when they get out in the game.
Well, let's talk about what this head football coach, Coach Pruitt, said. I've heard him say this two or three times, and I'll paraphrase a little bit, but basically what he has said is, I've never seen a player that didn't do it out on the practice field that ever did it in a game, ever. And he's said that in different ways two or three times. This is what I don't want to call it a problem, but see, that's what supposedly these first three games were going to be about. You thought, and I think this coaching staff thought, fans thought, we thought that you'd be able to see those two freshman quarterbacks play significant snaps against Georgia State. Maybe not against BYU, but certainly against Chattanooga, where you got maybe 30 snaps each or so to look at them and evaluate them. They've got zero snaps. So again, I don't. He said he's not gonna. He's gonna start Garantano, and I just don't see any way. Regardless of how Garantano plays, I don't believe that they're gonna put a freshman in Gainesville a week from now. I just don't believe they'll do that.
Doug, I was listening to Big Orange Sunday, which many have both live, but in your pre-church segment, and on podcast. And one of the things that stuck out to me, and I made a note of to ask you about, is you're of the belief that they are telling him to go a certain way with the football, and he's just not doing that correctly. Will you expand on that a bit?
Yeah, I think it's, whatever he is seeing is, there's two positions, maybe three, but two that I know of on the football field that have to see what's going on. You'd like for all your players to, but your quarterback does and your free safety does. You kind of have to see splits and see what's happening, know where the ball is, know where it is on the field, what time's on the clock, how much down and distance, same way as a quarterback. And that's the thing that he's just not seen. We saw it in the Georgia State game where, on a third down and three, you had a little curl route there. Well, you always have combination routes. If you got a curl, you got somebody going into the flat, and the curl was open. You want to throw the curl to get the first and 10. He didn't, and he threw it to the flat route and didn't pick up the first and 10. Late throwing the ball. He looks like me. I don't think he's confused. I used the term robotic last week. He plays somewhat robotic. But, this is a guy that came into this year with 18 starts in the Southeastern Conference. And it's just something that he's seen. You can see the frustration. There is no doubt in my mind that Jim Chaney calling plays could not trust what he was doing in this last ball game. And listen, when you can't trust as an offensive play caller, I wasn't an offensive play caller, was I? But I was a defensive play caller. And when you can't trust a couple of your players, maybe to play man coverage or to keep contained in a certain defense, you're not going to call it. And you could clearly, or I could clearly tell, that last half of the BYU game, he was not going to put that ball in position to that quarterback in position to make a throw that would get intercepted. And I don't know what you do on that. I really don't. You got to work with him. Chris Winkie, I don't want to say he's got to do a better job because I think he's working him, but there were some quarterbacks that we had when I was at Tennessee where you gave him one read. If it wasn't there, pull the ball down and run it. You know, I think Joshua Dobbs for a while did that. You know, don't go to that second receiver. If primary's not there, pull the ball down and run it. They'll have to make some adjustment to that. Hopefully he'll get better at that. But, you know, there were at least two or three passes. The one pass that was thrown late to Juwan Jennings in the end zone, I think that was in the third quarter, I believe. Could have been the fourth quarter. If that ball's thrown on time, that's a walk-in touchdown. And he's had three or four of those, you know, a game. And what's going to happen, and everybody knows this, is when we get into Southeastern Conference play, you got maybe a half a second on an open route to get it there. And if you're a quarter of a second or a half a second late, that defender's going to be there. So that's what they have to get done. They got to get that timing down. They got to get him getting the ball out of there. You know, they tried to do that. If you go back and think, what were the first couple of routes in the Georgia State game that Coach Chaney called? They were easy throws by the quarterback, one to the back. Now, again, that one was Ty should have caught that ball, but we did. You know, he didn't execute those either. So that's what has to get better, and hopefully it will. But you all know my thinking on hoping. You when you go in hoping and wishing in a ball game, you got some problems.
Doug Matthews with us. We're on the road with him, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
So, Doug, what was planned on that last play, the bomb that set up the field goal that sent it to overtime and Tennessee eventually loses, and what happened? And I think it is fair to ask the question. You got a head coach who's got a defensive coach background, even said this at the Knoxville Quarterback Club. He's there with the defensive backs almost every day in practice, and he's got one of his best defensive backs making a huge gaffe, and then a senior safety just whiff on a guy, run right past him in a critical situation.
Well, matter of fact, they have they got both the defensive coordinator, who's the secondary coach, and the head football coach standing side by side on there. Now, my take on that is this: I would not be critical of what was going on there. I don't think you want to use a timeout there. I know some people you could have done that, but first off, there was if you were at the game or listening to the ball game, there was a tremendous amount of crowd noise going on there. And quite frankly, you got a cornerback over there who's played who's probably your best defensive back right now. They were in some form. I don't know exactly what they were playing underneath, but they were in some form of three deep coverage. He was supposed to be back deep. Looked to me like, and I watched a couple of replays on that particular play, looked like he was not sure if he was supposed to be in a three deep or rolled up in a two deep where he would have the flat. But whichever one he was, he didn't do either one, because if you rolled up on the flat, you collision the receiver and you don't let him get off deep. You force him out, try to force him to the boundary, and you collision him. He didn't do that. And he didn't play three deep, either one on that. Now, I will say this, and this is one thing that has not been said about him, I don't believe. And I'm talking about Alante Taylor, who I think is an excellent defensive back that's going to get better and better. The thing that he did do, though, he screwed up, but he busted his fanny and he made a tackle. He was the only guy that could have made that tackle and at least kept him out of the end zone and forced him to kick a field goal. That's a plus. The other part of it is, I try to be careful in the thing that I said, but I don't see any redeeming football quality that number 18 has on defense. He doesn't make any plays. Maybe he's a pretty good tackler. He probably knows what to do. But this is the second game in a row. Go back to the Georgia State game on the quarterback run for the touchdown. He is coming up. He's an alley player. And what an alley player does is, and he should have done this on both of them. The one thing that you can never do if you are an inside pursuer or tackler coming from inside out, you can't overrun the ball carrier. You have to either force him into the boundary or get him on the ground, or at the very least, you know, I was coached to do this, and I coached it. If nothing else, grab him by the face mask. We'll take a 15-yard penalty at that point. But he didn't do that. It was a pretty simple tackle. Break down, get the guy on the ground, and you probably win the game. So, again, that's football IQ, and it's being able to play. I would make a change, something I did coach. I didn't coach quarterbacks. I can't make a comment on that. I'd make a change at safety before I made a change at quarterback, because I think we got some guys back there, Flowers, Theo Jackson, somebody that's going to play better than 18. And again, I don't think from, I'm just talking about from a football player. He would be a very hard guy for me to coach, because he does not make plays. And, if you have somebody that doesn't make plays, you know, in this conference, in this defense, you're probably not going to win a lot of ball games.
Doug Matthews with us. You can join him. You can discuss Tennessee football, SEC football. We'll get into LSU winning at Texas coming up, much more. 615-737-1045, our number, 737-1045, if you'd like to talk with Doug Matthews today. He's with us until noon. Doug, I know you like to watch games by yourself. What was your reaction when Garantano checked that ball down in overtime instead of trying to put it towards the end zone and settled for a field goal?
Well, it was probably expected, I guess. At that time, you know, I really didn't get too upset in that ball game. I was much more upset the week before, simply because the way that Tennessee was playing. The thing that in this old ball game that I liked, we played hard, we played rough, we played the way you got to play. We just didn't make any plays, and again, he's probably getting more of the blame than he should be getting, but that's that position. I was talking, just, you guys will get a kick out of this. As you all know, Alan Cockrell's on my show on baseball.
Yes.
During baseball season. So I was talking to him after game. He called me, and I said, Alan, you know, it's getting so bad that somebody's probably going to start throwing some chairs. And long-time Tennessee fans will know that we were coming after played one particular game when Al was quarterback. Somebody threw a fold-up chair at him coming out. He got a big laugh out of that. But so, you know, quarterbacks get, you know, they're going to get the blame. They're going to get the blame. But, you know, the other part of that is they also, who's the first people you mention when you start talking about former players? Usually it's quarterbacks.
Yep.
In some way, shape, or form. But he's just not performing well. And I think that's a pretty good example there. It was, you needed, once it got to overtime and once our defense was playing the way it was playing, you pretty much knew you had to score touchdowns. You know, field goals, you might get lucky and they have to kick a field goal, but you had to score touchdowns, and really didn't come close.
One thing to mention, and I know you mentioned, but I haven't heard much of it, is I really like the game plan that they had going into the game on offense. I mean, the way they ran the football, they ran it well. They had tough yards. Chandler got going. I mean, that's how this team is going to have to manufacture yards. And unfortunately, once it got to overtime, you're right, they had to get away from that a bit.
Well, what I tried to convey Sunday is that is the, at least from the offensive standpoint, and even defensively, Tennessee played pretty darn well defensively, really. They really did. When you consider they were playing a lot of crouch and Banks at outside linebacker. They haven't played much, you know. They still haven't got that defensive line quite where they want it. It'll get there. Remember, I don't think they played a single player in the defensive front that played 20 quarters total last year. All those guys are new. But they're big body. They got about 8 or 9 of them. Got that's going to get better and better as this season goes along. One thing I want to hit too, and I don't think that, you know, I try hard, as you guys know, not to make excuses, because there's no excuse for some things. But, you know, going into this season, Tennessee, the first couple of games here, they've been without their only returning defensive lineman, probably their best defensive lineman in Gooden. They've been without Daniel Betuli, they're by far their best linebacker. And they've been without Bryce Thompson. So at all three levels, they've lost a quality football player. and they don't have enough quality players over there. Now, having said that, they still should be 2-0 right now. But you know, if I'm a Tennessee fan, and I am, I'm encouraged about where we're headed right now. Don't like the fact that we're 2-0, 0-2. Don't like the fact we haven't got a good look at some of these young guys and got them some experience. I'm fully aware of what's going to happen after this week when Florida and Georgia and those other six SEC teams come up. But, you know, I'm not discouraged at all. I was extremely, as you all know, I was extremely discouraged after this first ball game. I'm not after this one. And this, listen, I know I've watched Jim Chaney call plays too many places. I've watched Jeremy Pruitt call defenses too many places. I've seen what Rocker can do, when he was here with the Titans and other places. So, you know, I'm not concerned about that. If we will play with that effort, they'll get the rest of it gradually better and better and better. And I think, quite frankly, you're going to start seeing a lot of those younger players. You're going to see two offensive linemen, freshmen, playing more and more. You know, those young linebackers I just talked about are going to be playing more and more. Burrell's already playing a lot. He's going to be a fine player. Theo Jackson's going to start getting more playing time because he can make plays.
Doug Matthews is back on our studios, a Music Circle in downtown Nashville, as we broadcast live today from Rockville at Champions Run for the Trucking for a Cure, their annual golf tournament to benefit the Monroe Carroll Jr. Children's Hospital at Vanderbilt. We go on the road with Doug, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive.
So, Doug, this week, Jeremy Pruitt allowed freshmen to speak to the media for the first time ever as a head coach. Eric Gray, Henry To'oto'o both spoke to the media. And this kind of ties into my question about improvement with this team. Watching for improvement from week to week and maybe becoming more competitive with the better teams on this schedule. What do you think? Do you think this is a signifier of what's to come with Jeremy Pruitt, that he would give that responsibility to two freshmen and allow them to meet with the media for the first time ever this week? And does that show us maybe what he's thinking moving forward?
Well, those two guys are sure going to be playing a lot more ball. I think you're going to see a lot of those younger guys. As I mentioned, I think Tennessee's pretty much on offense settled in right now. We saw it this past week on the offensive line, probably an 8-person rotation in there of some sort. Two freshmen are going to be there without question on that, those two big tackles, no doubt about that. To'oto'o is probably the best linebacker we got right now, to be honest. Suddenness, doesn't know exactly what he's doing, but, boy, he flies around. Both those young men, by the way, of course, Eric Gray, he's a star waiting to happen there. I think you're probably going to see between him and Chandler, probably 30 to 35 carries between them in most ball games, which is, I applaud. One may get 20, the other may get 15. I think it was, 24 and 17, I think, this past week, 16, something like that. And both those guys are, they talk smart, too. Sometimes, you know, it's not always, you know, the way you talk is not always indicative of how smart you are, but those are two highly quality young men who I can see why he put them out there first. Let me put it that way.
What'd you think of Quavarius Crouch? He didn't get a ton of snaps, but you talk a lot, Coach, about suddenness and sudden athletes. That's the way he looked when he was coming off that edge, even if he didn't make the sack.
You know those old Pac-Man games?
Yep.
You know when the Pac-Man, you got to go get him. You know, you're quicker, you're faster. You got to go get him. You got to attack. And that's what both Banks, To'oto'o, and Crouch can do. The other linebackers, and I think Batuli's one of those guys too, but the other linebackers, they're good, solid players, but they're essentially get them on the ground when they get to you. They don't go make plays. You're going to see a lot more Crouch. Listen, I watched him a lot in that ball game on a replay too. You know, he didn't know exactly what he's doing, but when he decides to go, he goes, and that's what you want. You know, that's what you want. Maybe you don't know exactly what to do, but go where the ball is. If you get in the proximity of the ball, you're probably going to be in pretty good position, pretty good shape. And Banks, To'oto'o, and Crouch can do that. They got a couple of other that can too. Not a linebacker, but some of those defensive backs can do that also. And you're certainly going to see them play more and more and more. Because, listen, this is what this head coach knows. They have, I believe, one turnover in two ball games or one takeaway. You have to get takeaways on defense. You've got to stop drives. You got to score on defense. You have to get takeaways on defense. And I think I'm correct. I think they only have one in two ball games.
Did you like the offensive line rotation better this week compared to the first week?
Yeah, they left their top five in there, I think, the whole first quarter, or their starting five, and then they made a couple of changes in there. You're going to see those five that started. You're going to see Lockyer in there. You're going to see those two freshmen. Locklear in there. You're going to see those two freshmen moving around a little bit, and they did a good job on it. I think that was the plan all along in the first ball game, but they just got kind of ahead of themselves a little bit and wanted to start making some changes a little bit too early. But that's smart football, and these are smart coaches, and that's what they did in this ball game. I don't know who the starters will be, but I would anticipate that whoever those five starters are, it's going to be five of those eight. And I think eventually Wright and Morris, I think eventually will be the two starting tackles on this football team. I think they'll be starting, both of them will be starting at some point in the offensive line at some position. They may not put them out of tackle right at start, but they're going to end up being the two offensive tackles at Tennessee eventually.
When you're coaching a team like this and you're playing a lot of young guys, and Alante Taylor's one of those young guys, played a lot as a freshman, but he's in his second game at this point as a sophomore, and Jeremy Pruitt just let him have it on the sideline twice, threw his headset, let him have it. He was doing exactly what every Tennessee fan watching that game wanted to do to Alante Taylor. Then he goes out there and he gives up a touchdown pass because he's supposed to have inside leverage, and he doesn't, on what Jeremy Pruitt said was a simple play they had ran 17 times that game, and for whatever reason he didn't cover it properly. And then Jeremy Pruitt said, hey, I would have been shaken too if I got a tongue lashing like that. Now, this week, it's all about building him back up. Jeremy Pruitt's taking responsibility. The teammates have said all great things about Alante Taylor and how he's going to bounce back. I'm saying all this, Coach, to ask you about the balancing act now for Jeremy Pruitt moving forward. To make sure you have discipline and you get on guys, but don't completely lose them, especially the young guys, because we're looking at this schedule right now. And if you're going to project it, the overall record does not look good at this point. So how do you keep guys invested and involved, even if the wins aren't coming one after the other?
Well, you got to know your players, and they're all individuals. I've cited many times. I won't get into the whole story now, but you know, I had one great football player. Had more than one, but at Tennessee, Johnny Jones was a great running back. I learned very early I could not get on Johnny. He's just one of those young men who he gave you everything he had, didn't ever say a word. But when I learned early, if I jump on him, he would go into a shell. So I didn't. I jumped on Doug Furness instead of Johnny and got my point across through Doug, because if I jumped on Doug, he would run through a brick wall. You know, he'd get mad at me. Say, I'll show that OSOB, you know, what's going on here. That's what you have to know. And Coach Pruitt knows that. He knows how to handle him. Here's what I found in coaching. When you're practicing or in a game, you can say and do, within reason do and say, about anything to a player. And listen, anybody that knows me, that's the way I coached. And I said some things during games that I probably shouldn't have said. But any player, and this way I was coached. But what you have to do as a coach is when that game's over, when that practice is over, you got to put your arm around their neck and explain why you're doing it. And then also talk about things non-football. How's your family? How's school? How's your girlfriend? You know, how's your dad doing? You know, things like that. If players know you care about them, and I think this is almost any level, but certainly in high school and college, if they know you care about them, genuinely care about them, you know, I've told the story many times. My defensive back coach at Vanderbilt was Bobby Proctor. He was the meanest, toughest. He still is. He's 88 years old, and when he calls me, I almost don't answer the phone because I'm afraid he's going to get on me about something. Hell, I'm 72 years old now. But when this practice is over, game is over, man, he showed me that he cared about me and loved me, and he still does. He calls me every month now. So my point is, if you have that relationship, you can do that. And I'm sure one of the things that Coach Pruitt is having to learn is this. You can say and do some things as an assistant coach and coordinator that you can't say or do as a head coach on a sideline, because it's a different job title. And, you know, everybody has to learn that. you know, you say things. I don't know if you all noticed it, and I heard some talk about who he was talking to, but if you were at the game, you didn't see it. But they had a shot of Jim Chaney on that headset, and he was jumping all over somebody on that, listening in on the phone. My guess is it was probably the quarterback coach, but I'm not sure about that. But, you know, you as an assistant coach, a coordinator can do some things. Just real quickly, and I know this isn't the question, but I just want to hit this real quick. Here's the way it has to do in a ball game. If the head coach jumps on a player for a bad mistake, and most of the time it's loafing. It's not that you drop a pass or things like that. It's when you do something that you weren't not supposed to do. If the head coach jumps on him, then it's that assistant coach or coordinator's job to then, okay, put your arm around and say, hey, you know, old Coach Pruitt or Coach Majors, whoever, they're just trying to make you better. If the head coach doesn't jump on him, doesn't correct him, then it's your job to correct. And where I see things going wrong is when the head coach chews a kid out. Once the head coach chews a kid out, it's over with. You know, it doesn't go any further than that. Then the assistant coach has got to come in and, okay, now, okay, you got that over with? You know what we're doing? Okay, let's go. But when the head coach jumps him and the assistant coach jumps him or coordinator, that's when you're going to cause problems. That happened to a heck of a running back from Beach High School, in my opinion, at Tennessee, and it's one reason why he left.
Want to catch The Zone on the go? Download the iPhone or Android app today. Download it now at 1045thezone.com.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. How about the $5 biggie back? Doug Matthews, man, he's with us. We're on the road with him, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
Coach, one quick one about this game for Tennessee against Chattanooga. Is it important for confidence that they come in there with a good game plan and soundly beat this team and work through some kinks and not come out of this one game, at least, with a ton of question marks about their performance? Or does it matter? You just go in and get the win and then get ready for Florida.
No, it matters. And, you know, this is the quintessential one game. We got to win one game. We got to win the next game. And this game, the next game happens to be Chattanooga. They need to play well. They need to come out of this. You'll take a win, but they need to come out of this game with some confidence, both sides of the football, without question. And I think, you know, even to a lesser extent, even though this is a staff that has a lot of experience, I think this staff needs to have a really good quality performance and get a good win out of this. Absolutely.
Doug, what has been your assessment of the grad transfers at quarterback so far?
Well, you just look at it now, you know, in whichever order. You know, you look at Ohio State, LSU, and Oklahoma, three grad transfers, all of them right there. They're in the top five or six without question. And where would they be without one of them was not a grad transfer. One of them was just a pure transfer, but Hurts and Burrow were both grad transfers. Where would LSU be without Burrow right now? You would assume, I'm not going to not assume, that Oklahoma's probably got a pretty good quarterback. They've had a run of about 10 of them in a row now, but it's made a huge difference in this game, in this sport. When you add in the fact the waiver rule on a non-grad transfer and how many of those young men, Fields, I mentioned Ohio State, one of them are playing, it's changed the way you look at recruiting now, because you essentially, once they hit that transfer wire, it's like they're a senior in high school again. You can anybody can recruit them to any place.
And I was flipping channels after the Tennessee game in Cleveland this past weekend, and I was watching the end of the LSU-Texas game. And it's a different looking offense for sure, with Burrow there and the way they're pushing the ball down the field some.
I think you could make a strong argument. I'll make a strong argument that the last probably half dozen years, LSU has had a similar and at times as good defense as Alabama has. I think they have one this year. Now, you can quibble about here or there, but let's just say this. LSU's had a championship defense for many years, but they haven't. Where Alabama's made this jump is Coach Saban made the jump in what he did offensively. It wasn't all that long ago, you remember, when LSU and Alabama played to a 9-6 ball game. There were five field goals kicked, remember, and LSU won, and they played from the national championship and Alabama won. So the scary thing, I think, for people in this league is LSU now, they have an offense that's probably going to put up 28, 30 points every ball game. And with that defense, they are a dangerous football team. I wouldn't have said that. They've always been dangerous because they played such good defense. They had such good skill players that they could make a play. Now they've got an offense that's, you know, that call on whatever it was, third and whenever, at the end of the ball game against Texas.
Yeah.
I just assume, hey, they're going to run the ball, make them use their last time out and punt it. Nope. They went four wide and they threw a touchdown pass off that thing. That's scary. It really is.
Clemson is also scary. And watching that game against Texas A&M, where the Aggies, just watching them play, Doug, and I know they were 12th in the country playing number one, it did not look like they stood a chance in that game. That's how dominant Clemson looked.
It is. Now, I think a couple of things on that. I think one thing that was in favor for Clemson is that all week long they had heard about what happened last year. Like I talked about it myself out in the College Station, you know, and having to really could have easily lost that ball game. But think about this, guys. Trevor Lawrence is not even – I could have listed the top 50 quarterbacks passing yardage in the SEC – I mean, in the country after two ball games. He's not on it. You know, think about that. They haven't even had to use maybe the best quarterback, certainly one of the top two or three best quarterbacks in the country yet, and they're winning very comfortably. Nobody in that league going to challenge them. Florida State isn't. Miami clearly isn't now. I don't know. Maybe Duke or, you know, North Carolina is not going to hang on where they are right now. I don't see anybody even putting up a fight against them right now.
Syracuse was thought to be the second-best team in that conference. They lose 63-20 at Maryland this weekend.
Biggest surprise of the weekend to me was that. Not that they got beat. But
now they play Clemson.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah. They could have another 60. When you're scoring points to break the speed enough to break the speed limit, you're doing pretty good.
Doug, we've got Bob Stoops coming on the show in about 25 minutes. And if I remember correctly, you're fond of him.
I love
him.
At
Oklahoma.
I love him. I think he was, number one, you know, he people in Oklahoma love him. I believe I'm correct on this. Now, they don't play Texas at home. And they don't play him home and away. That's a neutral side game. I think in his whole career, they're asking, but I think he only lost 8 home football games, I believe. 8. 8 home football games. Think about that. I've been on some teams that lost 8 in one season at home. But you talk about a guy that is loved in that state. You know, I know that's my second home. But they love him out there. Between him and Switzer, they could, you know, they're two completely different personality types. But I love him. He's a please. He might remember who I am, but give me my best, please. He is a quality guy.
I think you would like his book. I'm not into book promotion, but the title made me think of you last night. No Excuses, The Making of a Head Coach. That's the title of his book.
Well, he did two things. I know we just got him in here. Number one, no doubt in my mind, just like Ken Donahue did in 85 for Tennessee, When Bob Stoops came into Florida, that's when they became a championship football team. They had a championship offense. It's kind of the reverse of what we're talking about with LSU right now. When they brought Bob Stoops in there, buddy, they got serious in a hurry. And then the other part of him is the way he left. He got Lincoln Riley in place. He left him with a outstanding football team. He got off the stage. And he's letting him do it. He's staying at. You wouldn't even know Bob Stoops is out there if you didn't know who, you know, what he looked like. So, and you know how tough it is to give up a head football coach a job where you're playing for a national championship every year, if not every other year. And he was what, I think 56, I think 54, 56, something like that. But quality guy. I don't know him well, but everybody I know out there that knows him that I trust loves the guy.
Doug, you're a quality gentleman as well, and you have quality shows on the weekend. What do you have coming up on Saturday?
Well, just a reminder to folks, the next 2 weeks, as a matter of fact, early 11 o'clock games because of the way Tennessee is playing. By the way, Florida, Tennessee at 11 o'clock Central. Are you kidding me? But anyway, so we're on. We're moving up an hour from 8. We're only on from 8 to 9:30. So,
what did Tate say about that?
Well, we got that changed a little bit. He's moving to 7 o'clock, and Virgil's moving to 6 o'clock. So it only took 5 years to get that done. But okay. Anyway.
Doug, thank you.
You bet. Talk to you all next week.
Doug Matthews, one of my favorite hours right there, Chad, is with Doug each and every week.
He brings it every week. We love Doug.
He's presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. We love them for supporting this hour with Doug Matthews. The Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive.